ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, let's kick off with canals. We're diving tonight into one of the most fascinating aspects of global trade and engineering, the great shipping canals of the world. These waterways have shaped economies and influenced politics and connected continents for centuries, from the Suez Canal to the Panama Canal and beyond. They are marvels of human ingenuity and strategic planning, although times are very different now from when they first were established. So how are the canals holding up, and do they still play the same critical role they once did? And what's the future of canals? Might we build more of them, do you think? Are there great canals that haven't been built that ought to be? Professor Michael Bell is an expert in global shipping infrastructure and logistics. He holds the chair of Ports and Maritime Logistics at Sydney's Uni's Business School and has previously held senior roles in this field in the UK too. Michael, good evening to you. Welcome back to welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, Phil. Pleasure to be here.
I'd like to say there's a canal from here that you could have, you know, come into Nightlife and stopped at our dock. But
the nearest canal would be the Alexandra Canal, I guess, from
that's true.
Botany to Alexandria.
Yeah. That is true. That is true. They are remarkable. They're remarkable feats of engineering, canals, aren't they? Let's talk about the two big ones that save so much in shipping costs. The Suez Canal, which essentially connects Europe with the Indian Ocean.
That's right. It also connects the East Coast US to the Indian Ocean.
To the Indian Ocean as well.
Through the Mediterranean and across the Atlantic.
That's true. And then there's the Panama Canal, which if you look at a map of the world, it seems such an obvious canal to build. I mean, there's a thin strip of land in Central America there, in Panama. Yep. And you think, yeah, it's an obvious. They should have just dug a ditch between, because then you'd save all that time. You wouldn't have to sail around the bottom of South America, which is, you know, dangerous and scary and expensive.
Well, actually, the Panama Canal is brilliant in the sense that you didn't even have to blast a channel from one side to the other, because there's a lake in the middle. So basically what you need are a series of locks to get you into the lake, and then you sail across the lake, and a series of locks to get you down the other side. So it's a heaven-sent opportunity to get ships from the Atlantic to the Pacific.
Someone said to me once that, do you know, here is a fun fact, that the water level on one side of the Panama Canal, which would be the Caribbean, is different to the water level on the other side, which is the Pacific Ocean. But that can't be right, can it?
I don't know the answer to that. No, that's a fun fact.
Somebody might be able to help us with that. I was told this by a reputable source whose name I can't now defame. So,
well, let us be thankful then that there are locks in between.
Yeah. No, exactly. Otherwise, the Caribbean's going to drain into the Pacific or vice versa. That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about how they work, the Suez and the Panama Canal. They save container ships these days a phenomenal amount of time, even given the usurious fees they have to pay to go through them, don't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess the economically most significant one is the Suez Canal. Mm. And in many ways, that's an extremely simple canal. It has no locks. It's basically through sand. So it was just a question of digging a trench from the Mediterranean through to the Red Sea.
Where did the idea come from? Was it always there?
I don't know the origins of that, but it's clearly something that was so obviously strategically significant. I wouldn't be surprised if the Romans thought about it, but
I wouldn't be surprised either if the Romans thought about it. Because it would have saved them an awful lot of trouble, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because the trade to the east, if you didn't go around the bottom of Cape of Good Hope, was overland, wasn't it? So, you know, we had the Silk Road and all that sort of things. But particularly into India, if there'd been a canal,
So, it's still to this day highly significant, despite the interruptions that it's experienced. I guess the longest interruption was the Six-Day War, which closed it from 67 to 75. Despite its economic significance, it does close not infrequently. You have a given closed it for a week, which was a large container ship that got wedged in the...
The Evergreen. I want to talk about that in a minute. Yeah. Hey, here, someone's very kindly looked this up and said the Pacific side of the Panama Canal, right, is on average about 20 centimetres higher than the Atlantic side due to differences in water density and prevailing ocean currents. Well, there you go.
Well, okay. So
if there were no locks... The Pacific Ocean would drain into the Caribbean, therefore flooding Jamaica, making those islands uninhabitable. Maybe.
Maybe. but it may be... actually, I haven't looked into the geography of it, but there was a plan for a parallel canal through Nicaragua.
Really?
And which was talked about, I guess, over 100 years or so as an alternative to... Panama, but now I'm not sure. I'm sure that would have to have locks as well, but I think the Suez Canal is unique in the sense that...
It doesn't have any locks, does it?
Have any locks, it's through a geology that's very easy to dig, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing if you look from the air, and I'd encourage anyone to do this, to look at some aerial pictures of the Suez Canal, because if you thought it was a broad waterway like the Mississippi or something, it's not like that. It's very narrow.
It's so narrow that a large container ship could wedge into the side and completely block it.
Which happened, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing is that construction of the Suez Canal begins in 1859, but it opens only 10 years later.
Yes.
In 1869, which does seem an extraordinarily quick way to dig a very long hole.
Yes. I think it's just testament to the geology that's actually quite easy. So it's just a lot of digging, basically.
Mm. Tell me about the Panama Canal's construction. That began later, because there had been several... I mean, it's such an obvious canal to think of building, in a way, isn't it? Panama Canal, because you think they're out there where you can connect the Atlantic to the Pacific. That would be brilliant. That would have... If it had been there, for example, Columbus would not have made the mistake he made. which is thinking that he got to India. So there were two goes at it, wasn't there? There was a French go at it.
That's right.
And then that failed. That was in 1881.
Yeah.
Why did that fail?
I think it is a difficult canal to build because of the need for locks and the lake plus the fact that it's a tropical area, and I think a lot of the French engineers basically succumb to tropical diseases, I think. But it's far more difficult than the Suez Canal.
Tell me how the Panama works. It's complicated, isn't it? I once saw a diagram of it, and it's really not at all what you think of just sailing, you know, through the Magellan Strait or something. It's not like that. It's got lots of... As you say, there was a lake in the middle, but there are locks where they raise and lower the water level. Tell me how it works.
Yes, so the lake in the middle basically feeds the locks. So if you're coming, say, from the Pacific side, you've got to raise the ship up to the level of the lake. And you do that by filling a series of locks. That's... loses water into the ocean. So each time a ship goes up into the lake, you lose a lock full of water.
Right.
and on the other side, it's the same. So as you take the ship down into the Caribbean, basically you lose a lock full of water as the ship goes down through the locks.
Does that mean that the Panama Canal can't take the same amount of traffic?
Well,
the Suez can, because you would think there's going to be a bit of time involved in ships sitting there while they fill the lock up and then drain it.
Exactly. So there's that factor. Another factor recently has been droughts and insufficient water in the lake to basically feed the lochs. So that led to essentially a restriction. Well, it led to a number of restrictions. It led to a restriction on the number of ships that could pass through, but it also led a restriction to the size of ship. That because the bigger the ship, the more water it displaces, and the more water it uses in going through the lock systems. So there have been restrictions on the Panama Canal. And then, of course, it was the locks were widened in 2016, so there's now parallel systems of locks, and the newer locks are significantly larger than the older ones. And but what they have done, which is quite interesting, is to put some water saving basins next to the new locks. So rather than tipping all the water into the ocean, as the ship, so for a ship coming from the lake down into the Caribbean, say, when you empty the water from the lock to lower the level of the ship, that water is stored in water-saving basins rather than just being discharged. That saves over half of the water. I mean, you still lose water, but it's been a necessary device for water saving. And another trick that they now have is that there's on the original lock systems, there's two sets of locks, so you can have a ship going down while another one's going up, and they can use the water from the ship that's going down to partially fill the lock that's next to it for a ship that's going up. So they can save a bit of water that way. So it's quite sophisticated, and water saving is very much in the thinking of how to design and operate the locks.
It's why did you say there was a plan to build a parallel one, wasn't it, through Nicaragua. Tell me about that.
Well, it never happened. And I think it never will happen. So
was this to build at the same time, or just this is a more recent
No, it was post the Panama Canal.
Right.
And
what was the idea here?
I think the idea is that because of the locks, as we've noted, there is a limitation on the size and number of ships that can pass through the Panama Canal. So I think, you know, if it were cheap to build, it would probably make sense to do it on the basis that there's not enough capacity in the Panama Canal. But I'm reasonably confident it will never happen. So I think the days of major canal building are probably over.
That's very sad to hear. Or maybe it's not sad to hear. My guest is Professor Michael Bell. He's Chair of Ports and Maritime Logistics at the Sydney Business School. We're talking about the great canals of the world. My texter thinks I'm stupid. Do you not know the Panama Canal goes over a mountain? That's why the locks are there. The ocean can never drain from the other side. All right. Okay. Yes. Thank you. This is the thing, isn't it, that someone said to me that that's what broke the French, and that's why they never succeeded, because they were trying to build a canal a la like the Suez Canal, which would simply go from one side to the other. But the heights of the topography, the geography of it just didn't allow for that.
Well, if they were trying to build a lockless canal, I think they would have...
Foolish.
They would have given up fairly soon, I'm sure.
This is the thing, isn't it? I mean, both the Suez and the Panama... Hang on, the Panama gets built in... it opens in 1914. Now, there were steam shovels around at the time by that stage.
Yep.
But, gee, there are also a lot of picks and shovels, I imagine. The Suez Canal was opened in 1869. Well, there can't have been that many steam shovels around then, were there? Don't imagine.
Probably not.
So it gets built by human labour.
It's human labour, and I guess just by shovel. Huge workforce and lots of shovels, I expect.
Yeah. Alan from Semaphore in Adelaide. G'day, Alan.
G'day, yeah. Yeah, we've had a historian talk to us at our University of the Third Age on the two big canals in recent months, and she had some fascinating data. The water issue was a big one. The Every time a ship passes through the canal, 200 million litres of fresh water is lost to the sea, and there's an average of 30 to 40 ships per day.
Yeah.
So,
this is water that's lost out of that freshwater lake in the middle, is it,
Mike?
That's
right. That's right.
Yeah. That's right. And the waiting times is now becoming, with the droughts, it's becoming bigger and bigger issue. So it was 3 to 5 days in 23, and in 24 it's now 11 to 18 days. So that's a huge increase.
Yeah.
So there's 200 ships sitting out in the ocean just waiting to get through.
Yes, yes. It's definitely a bottleneck. And it's also very strategic, I mean, which is one reason why Trump is so...
Thank you for that. Based on that, climate change might close the canal, might it?
Well, I believe
the
drought
is a threat to it, surely.
Yeah. I believe the drought has ended. I mean, I don't think it was a permanent... I mean, climate change is clearly having an effect, but I don't think the drought was a permanent feature.
Mm. Tell me about the ownership of it and why Donald Trump wants to take it back. It was originally run and owned by the US because they built it, but it was given to Panama, wasn't it? I'm trying to think by who. Right. Was it Jimmy Carter? Somebody gave it to Panama.
I think that's right.
The canal was given to Panama, and it's been operated by that country ever since.
Yes.
What's the issue here? Why would the US want to take it back anyway?
Well, what seems to have upset some in the US is the fact that Hutchison ports operate container terminals either side of the canal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a real strategic issue, but it could be perceived as such.
And Hutchison is a significant Chinese company.
It's a significant Chinese company. Well, it's a significant Hong Kong company, but which is now, of course, China.
China, yeah, yeah.
It's significant in Australia, too. So it's one of the three terminal operators in Port Botany.
So they hold, CK Hutchison Holdings, operate the concession at Balboa and Cristobal.
That's right.
Which are both ends of the Panama Canal.
Yep.
And that's been a contract that I think was renewed in 1997 for 25 years.
That's right.
So what was Trump talking about? Was he talking about what?
Well, I think it's more in terms of whether the port operator could control the canal.
Mm.
And it's all a mystery because I don't think it's a realistic prospect that a terminal operator could control the canal. The canal's actually owned by the by Panama. It's owned by the...
By the country of Panama.
Yeah. It's run by the Panama Canal
Which is
Authority,
a stable, which is a stable, corruption-free, peace-loving, untroubled, wealthy, middle Central American republic, Michael.
Yeah. I guess the point is that there is a financial interest in it too, of course. The turnover of the Panama Canal is something like between 5 and 6 billion.
I was going to say, wouldn't that be the majority of the national income of Panama, wouldn't it?
Well, it's a major earner, absolutely, yes. As is the Suez Canal when it's working, it earns a similar sum. Well, it did in 2021. It earned $6.3 billion for Egypt.
But apparently this CK, just staying with CK Hutchison for a moment, there was a deal apparently, wasn't it? CK Hutchison says, well, we'll sell our interest to BlackRock, which is an American investment firm, for $22 billion. But that deal hasn't closed, has it?
No, it hasn't. And the two Panama terminals were cut out of the MSC BlackRock deal.
Oh, okay.
And were being dealt with separately. But that's also run into the sand. So at the moment, nothing's happened.
We're talking canals, the great canals of the world, with Professor Michael Bell. If you've got some questions, you might have been through some. I'll tell you about my thrilling canal in a moment. Florence in Petersham. Hi, Florence.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. There's a plane going over.
Oh, that's
In 1954, I went on the Orient Line the Orient from the Orient Line, mm-hmm. and we went up through the Suez Canal.
Hey.
1954, and I think it was, I must look at my diary again, Port Said.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went off to see the pyramids.
Oh, right.
Nice.
And we're the only ones at the pyramids.
Is that what? Is that right? Back in, this is 1954.
Oh, there were no tourists in those days.
Yeah.
Because these days, if you went to the pyramids, Florence, you would be lucky to see anything other than tourists. You'd be lucky to see the pyramids.
There was four of us in a car, and we went up, and there we were, just in the pyramids, and a few of the local fellows there. Mm. And we came back, yes, but up through the Suez Canal.
Wonderful.
And it was 5 weeks on the ship, and it cost, in those days, £95, $200 from Sydney to Tilbury.
Yeah, but 100 quid back in 1954, that would have been a reasonable sum.
Yeah.
Lawrence?
Yeah,
£95.
Yeah. Wow, what a trip. Well, plenty of people did it, didn't they? If you were coming out to Australia as a migrant, were you coming as a migrant, Florence? No,
I was born here in Sydney. I went through college, saved up my money, as a few of us did in those days, jumped on a ship and took off and went up through the Suez Canal and around to Tilbury and then worked in London and then hitchhiked through Europe in the summertime.
Yeah.
Yes.
Florence, may I ask, was it a passenger ship or was it a freight ship with some passengers?
Yes, if you look on the Orient Company, the Orient Line,
right.
It was Orient, and they carried the mail.
Right.
So these ships went ahead of the cargo ships because we carried the mail. And along the sewers, the other ships were docked and we passed them round Gibraltar and up to Tilbury. Yes.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Very good. All right, Florence, nice memories. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
For the call. 1-300-800 222 is the number. We're talking about canals. Thank you for my text that says the pyramids are a sloppy pile of rocks. I only look good on the outside. Pharaoh should have sacked the builders. Yes, well, maybe he did. We'll never know, will we? We will never know. Joe says prior to the French effort to build the Panama, Scotland attempted to build the canal. They also went broke as well.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they'd obviously been... So just back on the strategic importance of Panama, I mean, it's clearly vital to America because it essentially, you know, provides that commerce for them into the Pacific Ocean, but also between the two sides of America, shipping contact between the two sides of America.
I think that's the point, and mainly from a military point of view, if you want to get a warship from one side to the other... It's you need to use a canal.
Do they rip people off? Do they rip off American ships?
Well, that's the accusation.
Yeah. Is it true?
Of course, it's difficult to tell, isn't it? Because there's no. Well, there is an alternative actually. So if you're sending cargo across the U.S., you could use the land route. So a lot of containers are offloaded in Los Angeles or Oakland, and then double stacked on trains and go to Chicago and then off to the east side. So I guess you could get a fix on what the price should be from what that would cost.
There's massive oil tankers these days. I mean, when these canals were built, the size of these things weren't conceived of. I mean, can they fit through these canals or not?
Not through the Panama Canal, no. The Panama Canal, so in terms of container ships, before they expanded the locks, it was Panamax, and since they've expanded the locks, it's Neo-Panamax. And Panamax is about 13,000 standard containers, if you're thinking of container ships, which is it's a smaller size of ship these days. It's about a capacity, or in deadweight ton terms, it's about a quarter of the largest size of container ship. And the with the expanded locks, it's in terms of containers, it's about 12,000 to 13,000 containers, which is about the size of ship that comes to Australia. So the kind of size of ship you would see in Botany Bay is a Neo-Panamax, basically.
Okay. All right. We're talking canals. I must say to you, and I said, I should reveal, to me, the most exciting canal I've been in, through. I haven't been through the Panama Canal, but I have been through the Corinth Canal, which is a canal at the bottom of Greece. And essentially it saves you all the time of having to negotiate all the tiny islands down the bottom of Greece, and it provides a very quick way through. But it's an extraordinary canal, Michael. I don't know whether you've ever been on it, but it's deep. It's got sheer rock wall sides. Must have been an extraordinary thing to build.
Absolutely.
And one of the interesting things about it, and maybe you could tell me about this, is that when the ship is sailing through it, there are times when you feel as though you could pretty much reach out and touch the sides, and you can't. But the sides are not that far away. And I was told by the ship's captain, because I'm curious about these things at the time, he says, we'll never hit the side. I said, well, aren't you worried about bumping into the side of the canal? He said, no, because the way a ship operates in, if it's got way, that is, if it's got forward movement, he says it creates a pressure wave on either side of the ship that prevents it from hitting the side of the canal.
That's right. Yeah, so the ship cuts through the water and pushes water up either side, and that is a sort of buffer that pushes against the ship and keeps it sort of centralised in the canal.
Yeah, my texter says, Phil, I sailed through the Panama Canal on September the 26th. It was an all-day affair. Fascinating the way it was engineered. Ships had to book the crossing and container ships were waiting in the distance. Well, just going through the Panama Canal, I can imagine that... How much does it cost, anyway, to go through, Michael?
Oh, it's I can't give you a number, but it's a significant sum of money.
But what's that mean? $1 million or...?
No, but hundreds of... It would be between guessing, really, but hundreds of thousands, I would estimate.
But shipping companies would save that. But I mean, obviously, yes. These things are commercial decisions.
Exactly, that would be the... It would be calculated so as to be competitive with what the alternative would be, which I guess if it's containers, it's the land bridge.
Yeah.
If it's a ship, anything else, I guess it might be going around the southern tip of Chile. But it's it's clearly worth quite a lot to ship owners and shipping lines.
Sure. Graham from Carrying Up in Perth got an interesting question. Hi, Graham.
Yeah, g'day, Phil, and to your guest. I have a question, and that is, are you allowed to, as a private citizen, sail your boat or your large motor boat through the canal?
You're thinking of taking your own gin palace through there, Graham, aren't you?
Once I win the big money at the end of the year, I'm thinking of taking the 200-footer through,
No, that's a very good idea. If there are any cabins left, Graham, I'll join you. Michael, if you're a Russian... kleptocrat oligarch. Can you go through the Suez Canal or the Panama Canal?
I'm sure you can. If you pay the fee, I'm sure you can.
Right.
I guess there's an opportunity cost element there. You know, if the Panama Canal is taking your super yacht through, then of course it's not taking something else through, and I guess the price would be such that.
Someone on the text line, Graham, is telling me that it costs about $1 a ton. So I guess you could.
I'll just have to go on a diet. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Graham, I want my cabin on the port side. Okay, right. Just remember.
All done.
Thank you, mate. Bye bye. So here's a thing, a regulatory question too, Michael. Given that they are. Obviously, you know, it's a bit like a highway or... but can countries refuse you entry to these canals, or do you have some sort of right of way through them?
Well, I don't think so. The Panama Canal is owned by Panama via the Panama Canal Authority, so I guess they can do whatever they want to do. Whether they would dare to is another matter, but particularly if it was a US ship. But yeah,
my texter says Corinth Canal is the dearest per meter.
Right.
And the maxis, a big maxi yachts, are paying close to $1 million. Wow. Our sailboat, we went through, and it was $3,000. Okay, so it's not it's not nothing. Yes, Phil, I rode across the Corinth Canal West End, watched as the steel bridge came up from the bottom. Amazing. Yeah. Yes, it is. It is. It is quite an extraordinary thing. If you ever get a chance to go through it, I would highly recommend it. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Greg from Fremantle. G'day, Greg.
Could I just add to that, you know, taking your super yacht through, you'd have to get a pilot. You couldn't sail it yourself.
Oh, okay.
Through
is that
Panama,
the case,
the
case with all vessels, is it? Yeah.
Yes, so a Suez Canal pilot would be on the bridge, and the same would be true for Panama.
Someone says, can you go through on a canoe?
I don't know.
Well, why not? I don't know. I don't know whether you could. Anybody know? Anybody been through on a canoe? Greg from Fremantle. Hello, Greg.
Good evening, Phil, and your guest. I was looking at YouTube.
Yeah.
China's just dug a canal through the mountains.
China's trying to do what?
No, China just dug a canal.
Yeah.
Through the mountains.
Oh, okay. Whereabouts?
It's called the Pinglu Canal Project.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes out at the Gulf of Tonkin.
Okay.
Oh.
Where the Vietnam War started.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's, I was just reading it, cost $10 billion to build.
Where does it go from? Do we know?
I think it's, as far as I know, it goes from about central China.
Right.
And so I'm not sure if they've cut into the mountain and done it, or it's going under the mountain.
Mm. Well, it's something I could mention. I mean, there is a tunnel, a ship tunnel in Norway.
Mm. What's this?
So rather than building a canal through this peninsula, which has it's quite mountainous, they're building a tunnel for ships from one side to the other. And the Norwegians are very keen on tunnelling. They've built a lot of road tunnels in recent years, and so they've got the technology and the expertise. Anyway, so I think it's going to be the first ship tunnel.
So it's going to be quite some tunnel, isn't it, given the height of a ship above the water?
Yeah, it won't take the biggest ships, but it's big enough for fishing boats and also for some cruise ships.
Thank you. Thanks, Greg. That's interesting. 1-300-800-222. Yes, thanks to all the people who have sent me in one of the most famous palindromes of all time. Of course, a man, a plan, a canal, Panama. You know, it's a cracker. It is a cracker. Rosa, I don't think you can go through on a water ski, no, but thank you for asking the question. Here we go. Jean says, I sailed, motored a 44-foot yacht through the Suez Canal. So you can do it. It was a challenge amongst the container ships. And Neil says, 5 years ago, I went through the Panama Canal on a 50-foot sailboat. It was pretty amazing. Okay. You were talking, off air earlier, Michael, about the great canals that have not been built.
Yes.
And one of the most famous ideas is that when you look at the map of the world, of course, you can come up with these ideas, can't you? Think, well, that'd be a good idea. But the same with the Panama. It looked like a good idea, but when you got there on the ground with your shovel, of course, it was all much more difficult than you anticipated. But there was this idea of cutting once you're in the Indian Ocean, how do you get to South Asia? And there was this idea that you could cut a canal through the narrow part of Thailand. And this is an idea you were saying that's been around for hundreds of years.
Yes, well, I looked it up. Apparently the idea goes back to 1677, apparently. So 17th century, we've already thought about. It's been on and off as an idea for almost continuously since then, I'm sure. But I'm reasonably confident it'll never happen. Despite the, I guess it's a similar sort of distance to the Panama Canal. And
Geologically, is it feasible? They don't have to go over a mountain, do they, or not?
I haven't really looked at the... I think it's not a Suez situation, right, where you could just dig a trench, but... So there would have to be locks. Mm. And the latest plan that's being taken semi-seriously, I think, is not to build a canal, but to build a land bridge from one side to the other. So okay. You basically have a port either side. And then you,
the geopolitics of the South China Sea, though, are such that I wonder whether these things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Alistair from Laura says, would it be possible, and this is about the Panama, would it be possible to pump the water back into the lake to lower the ship rather than letting it flow out, or would the cost of that be too great? Because this is a rather alarming statistic, isn't it? Every time one ship goes through, there are hundreds of millions of litres of fresh water lost.
Yeah, that's correct. It has been thought about, but I think the cost of doing that is prohibitive, so I don't think there's any plan to do that.
Mm. Ray from the summit. G'day, Ray. There's an Australian connection with the building of the Suez, Ray, is there?
That's right.
Tell me.
The La Perouse expedition, which explored around the Pacific Ocean, they sent all their charts and maps back to France.
Right.
And there was the one guy who got back from the expedition. His name was John de Lesseps, and he became the uncle of Ferdinand de Lesseps.
Is that right?
Yep.
Hang on, I thought everybody was lost off the Perouse expedition.
Oh, you could be wrong. They sent him back overland,
right,
across Russia.
Okay.
Before they completed the complete loop of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, I see. Right. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
And the other one that really interests me is the canal that the Americans built when they thought that the Canadians were going to stop them using the St. Lawrence Seaway, and that came across from the Great Lakes to the Hudson River.
Yep.
And it included the Finger Lakes, one of which they used for testing submarines in World War II.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Thank you, Ray. That's fascinating. And I didn't know the Lesseps connection. That's really interesting. Colin from Charters Towers in Queensland. G'day, Colin. Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good.
On the ever reliable YouTube, I was reading.
That's the Encyclopedia Britannica, isn't it, of the modern age? Yeah, go on.
The scheme to go from the Gulf of Aqaba through Israel, through Gaza, and into the Mediterranean as a like an alternative to the Suez.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah.
Just wondering if there's any truth to it.
Yeah. You heard of this one, Michael?
No, but isn't the Dead Sea somewhere? I mean,
actually, hang on. That's true. Wouldn't we run into the Dead Sea at some point here, Colin? Which is lower than the actual sea level.
Yeah.
The old downhill, eh?
Yeah. Well, that's true. It would all be downhill. That's true.
Yeah.
No, we don't. No, I haven't heard about that. But you do think of them as essentially 19th century projects, don't you? I mean, even though some have been built in the 20th century, but the Great Canal building, which has latticed Europe and the UK, you can sail all the way from the English Channel all the way through to the Mediterranean on rivers and canals. So they're all connected. I think you were saying that you can get from the North Sea to the Black Sea.
That's right, through the Rhine-Main-Donau Canal, which links the Rhine to the Danube. Yeah.
Yep. All right. 1-300-800-222. Ross in Yokine. Hi, Ross.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for the program.
Pleasure.
I would suggest the most economically significant canal ever built was the Manchester Ship Canal, because it facilitated the development of the Industrial Revolution.
This is the one that connects basically Liverpool with Manchester, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on, Michael.
I could believe it in the sense that at the time it got Well, it was probably a major accelerator of the Industrial Revolution. And so in that sense, I guess it could be highly significant. Yeah. I mean, in terms of fees that can be earned, of course, it wouldn't be anywhere in the same league as Suez or Panama today. But I think the Manchester Ship Canal is not really used anymore industrially. And what really paid to the canals in the UK anyway was the railways. So
that's it. The railways would have paid to it, I suppose. Yeah. Thanks, Ross. Interesting. Yeah. Now back on the Panama Canal. As usual, the Nightlife family is coming to the rescue here. Rachel in Ellenbrook in WA says, Phil, regarding taking your private yacht through the Panama Canal, I was lucky enough to work as a chef on board a privately owned super yacht, and we travelled through the Panama Canal. It costs a small fortune. It's an unusual situation, as the captain of the yacht has to hand over responsibility to a pilot captain and their deck crew. It was a wonderful experience. My parents were able to track the journey through the various live feed cameras. And as a side note, the pilot captain offered me a job in his family restaurant in Panama City.
Oh, terrific.
All right. Glenn says, I find it fascinating for the Panama Canal, the Atlantic entrance is actually west of the Pacific entrance. Let me get my head
is
around that.
Is that right?
Let me get my head around that.
Have to look at a map. Yeah.
I'd have to look at a map. Is that right? I'm not doubting you. Glenn, that is interesting. Ken's been through the Panama. Hi, Ken.
Hi. You've actually pinched my thoughts. What was interesting, I saw a documentary on the Crow Canal. And the Chinese were interested in doing it. But apparently there's a bit of opposition in Singapore. They didn't like the idea of cutting across Thailand.
Well, it would get rid of... it would certainly get rid of... Singapore is the... Because Singapore is so strategically located there, isn't
exactly,
it? Because it's got
exactly.
such a major port as a result, and it's got riches as a result, Ken. So it'd be the end of them, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, I guess it's only the Chinese got the money to do it. We shall see.
Yeah, we shall see. Well, I doubt in today's strategic environment that it's going to get built, I must say. But anyway.
Yes, I wouldn't be betting on it.
Thanks, Ken. Good on you.
Bye.
Yes, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Alan from Fern Bay, there's a connection with Gustav Eiffel of the Eiffel Tower. Is there, Alan?
Yeah. I just come in a bit late. I didn't know if you'd mentioned this earlier. But
no.
Yeah, Gustav Eiffel from famous Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
In his day, the Panama Canal was being built, and they were losing so many men because they tried to dig a ditch straight across.
Yeah.
And so the government shut it down. And so they approached Gustav Eiffel because he had connections making big steel doors, like locks, and he suggested that they put locks in. And he ended up getting the contract to build the big locked doors, and they started redoing it again with his idea. So
when the Americans decided to do it. But he was involved in it, was he? Okay.
Yes, he was. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Have you heard of that?
Oh, sorry, Alan. Gustav Eiffel is contacting you from the next world. Sorry, Alan, your phone just went funny. But no, the answer was we hadn't heard that either. Mark from Albany. G'day, Mark.
Oh, good evening. Fascinating subject. Thank you. It's terrific.
It is. It is interesting, isn't it? Yeah, go on.
Bill, what was the size yacht you took through the Panama?
I was on a little... Oh, me?
Yeah.
No, I haven't taken you? No, not me.
I'm sorry.
I've been through the Panama Canal in the late 60s on a ship that it was a freight ship carrying passengers, passengers.
Right.
And I was a child at the time.
Sailing up around the top of Brazil and across to the Caribbean, the number coming out of the Panama is colossal.
Yeah.
But insignificant compared to the number of ships going around the bottom of Africa, around, you know, past Cape Town.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in your comments about Cape carriers and the impact they may have on on both these canals, because it seems Cape carriers are going to become more the standard, perhaps.
Mm. Michael?
Yes, well...
just to find something here, Cape carriers, Marco, what are they?
The ones that can handle, you know, Cape Horn and Cape Good Hope, and to a lesser extent, Cape Lewin in Western Australia.
Yeah, well,
where I live pretty close to.
Yeah,
yeah. The optimal size of a ship depends on essentially the distance sailed. So when the Suez Canal was closed by the Six-Day War, that led to some extremely large oil tankers being built that could basically to sail around the Cape of Good Hope and up to Europe or across to East Coast US. And those ships were actually too large for the Suez Canal. So when the canal did reopen, there was a generation of tankers that could no longer... Well, they couldn't use the canal, and the canal route was so much shorter than going around the Cape of Good Hope that these... super large oil tankers basically had to find other uses, mainly as storage.
Wow. Thanks.
Interesting.
It's been a fascinating discussion. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. No, it is. It is very interesting. Because then back in the 19th century too, there were all sorts of fantasy ideas too about building a canal through the middle of Australia. This is generally from people who hadn't been here. Even today, some people say, yeah, it'd be a great idea. You could bring all the water from northern Australia down to the bottom. Yes. If only you could get some fall in it to do that, I suppose that would be another matter. All right. Look, we better leave it, Michael, because time has beaten us, but it has been very interesting. Professor Michael Bell's been with us. He's the chair of Ports and Marine Maritime Logistics at the Sydney Business School. As well, thanks for all the texts and interesting comments too. The Denali Canal in Tassie is one you should mention. Yes, I know about that. Thank you for the text. The Denison Canal at Denali. Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good on you. And thanks to all the texts and calls as well. Very interesting topic.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.